Com. Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths. I am Yada. Each weekday here on GCN, we strive to expose the destructive and the deadly myths associated with religion and politics, with patriotism in the media, even with military and economic schemes. Our goal, instead of merely presenting the news, is to help you understand what is occurring behind those headlines, all while predicting how these events might shape our world over the next 20 years. Then during our second hour, we will engage God on His terms by way of His one and only covenant and through His always dependable Torah teaching, so that with His guidance, you'll be able to replace your religion with reason and engage in a relationship with Him. Our phone number for anyone who would like to question, criticize, or affirm anything that is said over the next 2 hours, as always, is 877-300-7645. This morning, rather than starting with the news, Will from Iowa has called in, and we'll begin with Will's question. Good morning, Will. Welcome to the program.
Morning, Yada. How are you today?
Great. Thank you.
Well, I just got a question. I'm in this conversation with this Wayne, saying that the fall feast or the Shavuot is fall. He goes, read Leviticus. Well, it's actually quite off. 23:11, then he goes 15. I can't find it again here. 15
okay.
On. And it says, after the grain offering and all that, after the Sabbath, and we're supposed to count. And then he says, that falls on the 19th. And then he's talking about, he says, he's asked you on your show that you couldn't really, just told him to keep listening, and you cut him off, and he says, I offer you the word of Yahweh, or he says Yahuwah, and where I can find it, which is never wrong. And I said, well, I just wrote him back. You never make mistakes. Because he says, you make mistakes. We're no crap. We're human. Not perfect.
Well, you know, I don't think we've ever cut anybody off on this show except one fellow, and that fellow was actually called back 3 or 4 times. There was a call that we received from, I'm not going to even specify the state or the individual's name, but it turned out to be have some shades of being racist, and that is one thing that I won't tolerate. But I don't think we've cut off anybody, including when we've had a regular listener who's called in many times. The first time that he called in, he was attempting to justify Muhammad's indulgence in pedophilia. And, I mean, even with him, he's become a wonderful listener and contributor to the program. So I don't think we have cut anybody off. Whether or not somebody might assume that the answer that has been provided to a question is incomplete, that really is their decision. That's I'm here to tell you that I am a million miles from perfect, never claimed to be always right, and that the very process of learning means that each day you're exposed to something new. So long as you're diligent about learning, you'll be exposed to something new that will shade your understanding of something that, you know, you previously had said one way or another. So anybody that claims to be precisely accurate, they are someone I would be very wary of. Now, as it relates to timing, this is a question that anyone who has read Yada Yah, anyone who has read the Introduction to God, anyone who has listened to this program knows that I am not a stickler for timing. Quite frankly, I'm not a stickler for timing for several reasons. One is that it's impossible to determine timing precisely as it relates to Mikra. You can always consistently get within a day or two of the intended day. And it is always interesting to apply our best efforts to understand the timing. But I think God has been coy here, a little bit vague, for a number of reasons. One is the moment you start emphasizing timing, which is now this mindset is, let's do the right thing in the right way at the right time, as opposed to let's emphasize understanding what Shavuot represents. Now, if somebody wants to have a discussion, I'll talk to them until the cows come home about what does Shavuot represent. Why were the first four Mikra fulfilled in the fourth millennia of humankind? What is it about the first four that needed to be fulfilled all at one time? Why are we still waiting for the last three to be fulfilled? What do each of them mean? How do we view them as a collective whole? If the discussion is going to be on what do they mean, how do they represent, why is God inviting us to attend these meetings, what is the benefit we receive from answering the invitation, then I think that the discussion always bears fruit. When the discussion is said, instead is, what day should it be celebrated? I think what we end up getting is sidetracked, contentious, and find virtually no satisfaction. Now, there's reasons why it is nearly impossible to be certain of the day, which is why I don't even try. First, there is no way, God does not give us a method by which we can determine precisely what is the first day of the first month. It's never explained if it's observational or astronomical. It never is explained if it's the first sliver, or does it have to be enough of a sliver to be easily visible? Does the first renewing light on the moon have to occur before the sun sets? Or if it's after the sunset, which day do you start the month? What happens if it's cloudy, which it often is? What happens if you're at a place where where you don't have good access to the horizon? There are way too many questions regarding this. Now, are you going to get within a day by using any method? Absolutely. Personally, I think God uses that He is precise, and the only precise method is astronomical.
Yeah, I've been inviting the Amish in my area, everybody around me, to come to the 16th evening, bring some loaves of bread. I even tell them to bring some food, because I can't afford to feed everybody if they come. So to bring something, I don't care if you're, gay, if you're atheist, right, or whatever. God is inviting you. I'm inviting you to come to the celebration and have a party.
Yeah, and that is the purpose of it. The purpose of Shavuot is that for those of us who have answered Yah's invitation to attend Pesach, which is Passover, which is makes us immortal. It's the doorway to life. It's God's provision for eternal life. Unleavened bread, matzah, which removes the fungus of sin from our souls, making us perfect in God's eyes. It's the means for us to be redeemed and thus saved. Is the second day of the of these four spring feasts, leading to Bukurim, which is firstborn child, where we're adopted into God's family. Those who have answered the invitation, who have benefited from those 3 days, are encouraged to do exactly what you've done, to throw a party. Everyone is invited, those who are part of the covenant, those who are not, young, old, rich, poor, men, women, it doesn't matter. Everyone's invited. And during that time, the purpose of it is that God's children, which are adopted into His family, begin to grow, because we're empowered, we're enriched with God's teaching, and we're empowered by His Spirit. I mean, the whole purpose of a family is just not to say, okay, I'm adopted into God's family, I have been saved, I'm going to sit here like a bump on a log. That's not God's idea of what a family is all about. A family is all about exploring, learning, growing, sharing. And so the purpose of seven Sabbaths is that it's the promise of seven, of man plus God together. The promise of seven is being fulfilled during Shavuot, which is seven sevens, whereby God enriches us with His Torah teaching. He empowers us with His Spirit, which gives us the opportunity to share His covenant with everyone who will listen. Now, most people won't listen. Most people are so in love with their religion, so beguiled by their religion, any information, even if it comes directly from God, which is counter to their religion, is immediately rejected. So most people's ears and minds are closed, but not everyone's. And so God would love everyone to openly consider what he has to offer and to take advantage of it. And the purpose of Shavuah is to accomplish two things. One is it's our time to grow. And we grow by doing. We grow by experiences. And it's our time to grow. And it's God's time to therefore share what he is offering through us with other people. God likes to work with his family.
And so
you've got it.
That through Passover, unleavened bread, and first fruits, he has made us perfect, even though we are not perfect, by just showing up and trying to observe these times. He has perfected us. And
right.
We don't have to get this completely right.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, even if you look at God's instructions that he etched on the two tablets, where in English we would read, thou shalt not kill. Well, what he actually wrote was, you should not make a habit of killing. It says you should not commit adultery. What it says is you shouldn't get comfortable committing adultery. Everything that God says in his Torah is in recognition that we are, as I always claim to be, flawed. And that we as material beings are indeed flawed. So recognizing that and still wanting perfection in his home, God has a remedy, and these are the remedies, to make his children appear perfect. And to resolve anything we do. We have, it's the Pauline doctrine is that the Torah enslaves, because it's this terrible, mean-spirited group of laws that you have to obey all of them or it condemns you. Well, of course, the Torah does not mean law. It means teaching. There is no Hebrew word for obey. And rather than being convicted for having violated one rule, the Torah actually is our liberty to be flawed individual appear perfect. That's the whole provision of all of this.
If it was law, then that means we would be under a law, we would be enslaved, and then he would accuse us and take care of us.
Yep. By the way, I'm also going to be celebrating Shavuah on Thursday, May 16th, as the sun goes down, because it is seven sevens from Bukurim, and it is seven sevens plus one from the Mikre of Matzah, or unleavened bread. So I happen to concur with your timing. Thank you, Will.
Good day.
And that when it was brought up here by Will here just a moment ago, I thought I would just cover a couple of things that I don't want to be misleading. I don't want to infer in any way, shape, or form that we should completely disregard God's testimony regarding the timing of each of his seven invitations to be called out and to meet with him, the Mikra. It isn't for us to decide what we want, when we want to meet and God to comply with our schedule. That isn't the intent of that at all. God gave us a thorough discussion as to how we go about the process of determining these dates to meet with him. And so we can, if we use his instructions, we will always get within a day or two. And it's use your eyes to read what he has said. Use your mind to think about it, and do your best to come up with what day you think is the day that he has designated. You might be off a day or two. Whether or not you are is what is immaterial. What's material is that you realize that God has given you an invitation, that you've answered it, that you understand what he's offering, and that you are capitalizing on it so that you benefit from it. And if you miss it by a day or two from when he thinks it is, I think it is irrelevant to him. A great example of that would be when Hezekiah realized that after reading the Torah, that the only defense he had against the Assyrians was Yahweh's protection. And he realized that Yahweh's protection is afforded to those who answer his invitations and meet with him. And so he decided that for the first time in centuries that Passover, unleavened bread, and Bukkurim would be celebrated in Jerusalem. But it was impossible to do so in time because the Jerusalem was so corrupted with pagan religions, and the people's minds were so corrupted. He said, I'm doing everything I can, I'm working as fast as I can to clean up this mess so that we can actually celebrate this in accordance with your instructions, but I need a couple of weeks. And God said, fine. That tells me, and should tell all of us, that it's the intent of this, our attitude towards these events, that is what's important. You know, if you were to show up at a party that's been thrown on your behalf, and you show up all grumpy, but you say, you know, I'm here, I know this is the date, I'm at the right place, but, you know, it's it really wasn't a good fit for my schedule, but I'm here. And you're just a grump. You know, it's that is not the right attitude to capitalize. God wants you to appreciate what he's done, to understand it, to respect it, to appreciate it, and to want to benefit from it. And that is the name of this tune. Turning to the news, a sad day in Afghanistan. It's a wonder that Americans are still there, that this government continues to subject its citizens and the Afghanis to the consequence of this horrible war. Dateline Kabul, Afghanistan, a suicide car bomb in southern Afghanistan killed three American soldiers and two American civilians, including a State Department Foreign Service officer, over the weekend on Saturday. It was the deadliest attack against the United States forces this year, officials said. You know, it's interesting that the two American civilians, including the State Department attaché, won't even be listed in the death toll. The death tolls of these wars are only counted on the American side as those who are active military, which means all of the civilians, whether they be CIA or State Department or government employees or contractors, they aren't counted in the thousands who have died. An emotional eulogy to the staff and families of the American consulate in Istanbul. While in Istanbul, Secretary of State Lurch, that would be John Kerry, talked on Sunday about the individual who was killed. She was just 25 years old. What a shame. Mr. Kerry said that she had previously served in Venezuela. By the way, you are not serving. This concept of getting a paycheck from the government, whether it be in the military or police or fire department or in politics, it's not service. If you elect of your and volunteer to freely do something, then you can qualify that as service. But while you're getting a paycheck, it's a job. We have given a good term, an errant connotation as it relates to the government, to create a myth that the government is a good thing, that people voluntarily serve, and that service to the government is a overall good. Anyway, he said that he deplored the harsh contradiction of her death, which occurred as Americans were bringing books to a reopened school. And we will consider that contradiction and our lack of understanding regarding it when we return. Shattering Myths. I'm your host, Yada. You can join our conversation by dialing 877-300-7645. So here is Kerry that recognizes that there is a harsh contradiction here, that this young girl, 25 years old, was killed by the Taliban. He knows it was the Taliban because she was bringing books to school. He went on to say, the folks who want to kill people, and that is what they want to do, are scared of knowledge. They want to shut the doors. They don't want people to make their choices about the future. That was his comment. Now, what was it that caused the fundamentalist Muslims to want to kill people who were opening the school and bringing books to a school? Islam. What does Islam say? Islam says that anyone who questions the religion will become an apostate. And then it says that when a Muslim becomes an apostate, denounces Islam, they must be killed. So in Islam, there is the realization that any thoughtful examination of the Quran, any thoughtful examination of the Hadith, any thoughtful examination of Islamic history, any thoughtful examination of the world of Islam at present will cause anyone who is informed and rational to reject the religion. If you study Muhammad's life, you realize he was a pedophile, he was a rapist, he was incestuous, he was a mass murderer, he was sadistic, he was a ruthless terrorist, he by his own admission was a liar, he was a slave trader, he was a kidnapper. Why would anyone in their right mind want to embrace the lifestyle, the example of a man who was so repulsive? And so in Islam, there's the realization that if anyone is allowed to think, they won't be a Muslim. The only way they can compel their society to remain Islamic is to make the consequence and the opportunity to reject the religion nearly impossible and egregious. So if Kerry had recognized that the motivation was to protect the religion of Islam, as opposed to this nebulous concept of the terrorists just want to kill people without understanding their motivation, this would have been a teachable moment. But as such, it was just a waste. Here the enemy has just been painted as those who want to kill because they don't want people to know and to be able to choose. And yet, the head of the United States State Department didn't provide any information that would help people know so that they could make a rational choice. Now, Islam means submission. It is the antithesis of choice. He had the perfect opportunity in what he said to make that point. That so long as Islam exists within a society, so long as it is pervasive in a society, there will be no free will. There will be no choice. Because the consequence of choosing not Islam is catastrophic in an Islamic society. In fact, even the consequence of discussing Islam honestly is catastrophic. In every Islamic country, the blasphemy laws state that if an individual in any way discredits Muhammad, Allah, the Quran, or Islam, they must be put to death. And when this happens in an Islamic country, Muslims are enraged by their imam and they go and burn the homes of the neighborhood associated with the individual who had the courage and the intelligence to question this amazingly deceitful, destructive, and deadly religion. And yet here in the West, where we can actually do this, rather than have that young woman's life count for something, the Secretary of State squandered it because he was unwilling to honestly and openly discuss the problem. It is as if the United States is in the same problem that Islam is in, that if people actually know the truth, they will relinquish their loyalty to the government. Once you know the truth about Islam and what the reasons are that they kill, you'll recognize that what we did in Afghanistan was counterproductive. You realize what we did in Iraq was counterproductive. You realize that your government is lying to you when it says that it is engaged in a war against terrorism, that it has squandered $6 trillion and a million lives, making a bad situation worse. Attacks are picking up in what is known as the country's fighting season as the weather gets warmer, and the Taliban are expected to intensify their efforts to destabilize the Afghan security forces as NATO troops who have secured the country for the last decade start packing up for their departure. That is not true. American troops have not secured the country. The Taliban is every bit as vital in Afghanistan as it was 10 years ago. In fact, over the last 3 years, the Taliban has become more pervasive, not less pervasive, in Afghanistan. And the moment America leaves, it will be just like Vietnam. It'll take a matter of hours, days, or weeks, and the Taliban will be back in charge as if America had not squandered its coin and its blood. In this case, the suicide bomber detonated his vehicle while on a road in the morning as an American convoy passed by. The convoy was on a trip to inaugurate a new school where they were delivering donated books. And, you know, Americans say, oh, wonderful, look at all the stuff we've done. It's so spectacular in Afghanistan. The people get to vote. Yeah, they get to vote for one candidate, Karzai, who is probably the most corrupt leader of any nation on earth. It's in terms of money laundering and duplicitous speech, probably the most corrupt government on planet earth. What do they get? Oh, so well, their schools are open for little girls. And yes, the little girls have acid thrown in their faces. Their arms are cut off. Those schools are bombed. And the moment America leaves, every girl that attended one of those schools is going to be dead. Either that or mutilated. Oh, but women, you know, have rights. Women can vote. Every survey that has been done of Afghanistan over the last 10 years has shown that without question, the rights of women and the treatment of women is far worse, much more deplorable, even now, than it was under the Taliban. That women have fewer rights, they're more likely abused, and they have fewer redresses for the abuse now than what existed under the Taliban. Every possible thing that we could have done that would have been counterproductive is what the outcome of the Afghanistan invasion has become. We went after a symptom as opposed to the root cause of 9/11. We pushed the fundamentalist Muslims temporarily out of Afghanistan and into Pakistan, where they further destabilized that country, a country with nuclear weapons. And in the process, all we have done is manufacture jihadists and mujahideen in Afghanistan and around the world. It was not just a waste of coin and blood. It was counterproductive. It was actually suicidal. Well, the Taliban did take responsibility for the blast, but it was unclear as to whether or not they were trying to kill the Afghani governor or Americans, or just preclude the books from going to the school. An American civilian was also killed on Saturday in a separate insurgent strike. There are no insurgents in Afghanistan. It's a term that is used so that the media and the government and the military don't have to say jihadist, so they don't have to say fundamentalist Muslims or mujahideen. This death will also not be counted, won't even be described. No one knows what the circumstances were about the American civilian being killed. But all we do is count military deaths. In fact, the article concludes, so far this year, 30 coalition troops have died in Afghanistan, 24 of them Americans. One of the reasons that we could not win the war in Vietnam, same reason we cannot win the war in Afghanistan, is over the weekend, 11 Afghani children were killed in a NATO airstrike in eastern Afghanistan. At least one woman was reportedly killed, and six are believed to have been severely injured. NATO confirmed that the, quote, fire support was used after a U.S. civilian advisor died in a militant attack, but said that it had no reports of death, although the pictures of the dead and mutilated bodies are now being distributed amongst Muslims the world over. Photographs sent from the scene to international news agencies showed the bodies of the dead, including young children, surrounded by Afghan villagers. You know, you might say, okay, so the Taliban bombed the American convoy and killed several Americans, so it is five Americans, two civilians, three troops. So there's nothing wrong with us seeking revenge and bombing the Taliban, because in this particular case, it is quite likely that somewhere around 8 to 10 Taliban Mujahideen were killed in the strike. So we may well have killed more of them than they killed of us over the weekend. But the very fact that women and children were killed along with them, all that does is enrage the Afghani people. It enrages Muslims. It manufactures more jihadists than we killed. That what we're doing is counterproductive. This idea that you can trade body counts, as we did in Vietnam, does not prevail when invading a country. It will not work. It is not working. This was failed from the start. Of course, this attack was very close to the Pakistani border. The Taliban who were killed were all Pakistani. The notion that America is supplying billions of dollars of weapons and aid to the Pakistanis as if the Pakistanis were our ally in a mythical war against terrorism when the Pakistanis are our primary foe is all part of the stupidity that is being deployed by our country and all being deployed because no one seems to care as to what the root cause is, what the motivation is, what the religion is like that causes people to act this hideously. And therefore, rather than dealing with the religion, America wants to deny the influence of the religion and simply lash out its symptoms. And with each bomb and with each bullet, we make our situation and our future face worse every single day. Shattering Myths. One of the consequences of the constant drivel that comes out of the mouths of American diplomats, of American government officials, the American military, is that we constantly make blunders internationally, just as we are when we pretend that Egypt and Pakistan are allies and provide weapons to these fundamentalist Islamic governments to our own ultimate destruction. Well, we're doing the same thing, of course, with the Mujahideen, the fundamentalist Muslims that are opposing the Assad government in Syria. It, just because Assad is rotten does not mean that the side opposing him is good. It doesn't even mean that the side opposing him is better. In fact, the Mujahideen that are opposing Assad are actually worse than he is. They'll be vastly worse for the people of Syria and vastly worse for Israel, vastly worse for America. As evidence of this, the suicide bomber today killed at least 15 people. The number will probably double, and wounded 53. That number will also probably double as the dust settles in the business district of Damascus on Monday. It was a suicide bomb that was deployed by the those in rebellion against Assad. Nothing says I want peace, liberty, and democracy more than a suicide bomb, I suppose. Car bombs and attacks on civilians are commonplace in the Syrian conflict. Most of the attacks on civilians and all of the suicide bombs are perpetrated by the side that America is aiding and abetting. As a result of militarizing both sides, something the world is wants to do, at least 70,000 people have died, and many times that have been bludgeoned and raped. In a story that is that probably will not be seen or considered by most, the U.S. Federal government did something that bodes very poorly, puts a terrible dark cloud over our future. A federal judge yesterday threw out a case of a German citizen who says he was wrongfully imprisoned by the CIA, ruling that Khalid al-Marsi's lawsuit poses a grave risk of damage to national security by exposing government secrets. Now think about that for a moment. I shared on this program the story of Khalid al-Marsi. He is a German. He was down in Macedonia. He was picked up by the CIA. He was sodomized. He was raped. He was tortured for months. He was incarcerated secretly without without having committed any crime, without being any threat to the United States, without having any association to any foe of the United States, and he was brutalized over a period of 5 months. Without any court proceedings, without any claims being brought against him, without him having any opportunity for defense, and for 5 months, the U.S. government's CIA brutalized him, sodomized him. And yet, rather than address the man's grievances, and his grievances have all been vetted by European courts, particularly Germany. This case is extremely well known throughout Europe because European governments and courts have vetted the man's claims. And what he has said all took place. The CIA wrongfully captured him, kidnapped him, imprisoned him, and tortured him over the course of months. And when they realized it was a mistake in identity, they dumped him out in the streets, I think, in Algeria. And so now, rather than addressing the man's grievances, compensating him and apologizing to him, the U.S. government has said, no, there is a grave risk of damage to national security by exposing government secrets. In other words, if you knew the truth about your government, if you knew how hideous the U.S. government behaves, that you would no longer support it. That's the truth. Once somebody actually knows how foolish our military is being, foolishly our military is being deployed, how counterproductive our military was in Vietnam, in Afghanistan, in Iraq, once Americans recognize how unfair its judicial system is, how corrupt its government is, how counterproductive the government's schemes have been economically, ultimately confiscating 98% of people's savings by devaluing the currency, by putting the country into recession. Once you come to understand what the government is trying to hide, you will no longer be patriotic. You will no longer be political. And that is what this judge is saying. We can't risk doing the right thing for this man that we wronged because there is a grave risk to national security if the government's secrets are exposed. Now that's something to think about.
Hi folks, this is Pastor Butch Paul. Please allow me to share some very exciting and important health news with you. I've been struggling with type 2 diabetes for about 15 years.